And the
podcast
begins with a song of rebellion.
How can this
podcast
be my life?
CD Burners.
Welcome back to CD Burners. Damn. I feel like we've had some good ass episodes lately. Thank you.
But I mean, not me.
The last one with Matt Squire was really fucking awesome. But we're doing two in a day. And today we're talking about really one of my faves. I think both of our faves.
Yeah.
The format, interventions, and lullabies.
I texted you last night.
Yes.
Did you listen to that fucking
podcast? No, I meant to this morning, and then everything got crazy trying to set up.
Listened
to the worst podcast.
It's
ever.
A little bit, it's okay. So the format, it's a little bit difficult to, I mean, not difficult, but it's like, you know, not a lot of ton of information out there.
There are only two albums by this band, which is wild. And it never really made it super big, but it's an incredible album. So yeah, like you said, there's not a lot of information.
So I literally listened to everything I could about the format. I knew enough about them. And I was like, maybe there's some bullshit that like, I don't fucking know. I listened to the worst podcast I've ever heard in my life. And if there's anybody that listens to our podcast that feels the same way that I felt about these fucking jokers, then I get it. I got you guys. If you fucking hate me the way that I hated these guys, I get it. Like, I'm fucking down. Like, these guys sucked ass so fucking bad.
I like how we both have called out other podcasts on here. I actually like those guys, but I understood like why people get frustrated with us. And I still listen to Pod Goes Punk and Finding Email, like in our research. But you're really upset about these guys.
They said just the dumbest shit I could. It wasn't just dumb opinions. It was just wrong. Mm. Like they were just like, they were wrong. They were like, the guitars aren't good. The bass isn't good. The drums sound terrible. And I'm like, are you guys talking about the same fucking album?
Yeah, this album sounds awesome.
They're like, he doesn't rhyme. They said that, kept saying that a lot. Like, and I'm like, that to you is the defining signature of what makes something good. Also, he does rhyme. Like, it's just like, it would be like if I was reviewing another album right now. You were doing the format and I was just like, oh shit, we're doing the format. And I did a completely different album. It was like, we were not listening to the same fucking thing. Get your goddamn ears checked. I haven't listened to any of your other fucking podcasts besides this one. And I absolutely fucking take back a lot of the stuff I say all the time, but get your ears checked. I'm more than happy to go back and be like, yeah, you guys had great opinions on a lot of other shit. This one, you guys fucking sucked and I hated you.
This album is such a sleeper album. It's so good. It never got the attention it really deserved. And it's just like an incredible, fun pop album. It came out October 21st, 2003 on Elektra Records. And I think a lot of the reason why it didn't get the love it deserved was because of this like internal label drama at Elektra. They got acquired by Warner Brothers. Elektra got acquired by Warner Brothers. Then the executives or whatever were like, we're going to just not care about anything that we don't think is like a sure thing. And this new band from Phoenix, the format, fuck them, whatever. And I guess it just, their contract then got like picked up by Atlantic. And then Atlantic was like, they didn't even really try to push this album. They were just like, why don't you guys just make another album?
I literally don't understand any of that shit. It doesn't make any sense to me. I like don't. And I can understand the frustration of like the guys in the band because they're also, you said 2003, right?
Yeah.
Probably pretty young. I don't know. I think they're probably around my age.
You have to remember though, like this is the time that like Napster and everything, like the ripple effect of Napster from 99 was like trickling over into the music industry and everybody was still stealing music just on different programs. And so all these major labels were like, wait, what the fuck are we doing? Like, we can't sell records. We can't sell physical CDs anymore. Everybody's stealing our records. This was like before really like the iTunes store had taken off. And even though the iTunes store existed, like I was fucking 13. I wasn't going to go and spend a dollar a song. You know, I was going to go steal it. I was just going to download it off of LimeWire or BearShare or whatever.
BearShare?
Did you have BearShare?
No.
No, there was LimeWire, there was BearShare, there was Kazaa.
Gay guy stuff. That is what my gay friends...
BearShare? Is that a gay thing?
No, but there's like several types of gay dudes that they told me about.
Yeah, there's bears.
They said I'm an otter.
A hairy, small guy?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, what the fuck is an otter? And they're like, you're an otter. You're like a twink, but hairy. is what they said.
That's funny.
BearShare. I'm going to tell that to them.
But yeah. Oh, also, I think this album leaked and then the label had to rush to put it out because they were like, oh, shit. Like, people are just downloading all of it. I guess we should just make it available for purchase. So the whole like rollout plan and everything got fucked. And they, I don't know, huge fail.
Do you think they're,
because this is an amazing album.
Do you think they're a victim of the times?
I think that it's hard to look back and say that they're a victim. Yeah, I guess they're a victim, but it's just part of the story, I think, for Nate, because Nate Ruess, who's in The Format, goes on to have a shitload of success with his band Fun, which is Nate and Jack Antonoff. He writes songs with Pink and he works with Eminem and he's at the Grammys winning all this shit. Nate eventually gets his flowers.
Well, dude, obviously, if you listen to any fucking Format shit, when I heard this album, I was like, these are the best songwriters in the world.
It's incredible.
I was like, this is the type of music that I want to make. When I heard The Format, I was like, this is what I like.
Totally.
I was like, this is good pop music. And I think that The Format paved the way for like all of that indie pop. I think that every artist from fucking probably like Arcade Fire to Taylor Swift stole shit from The Format, whether they knew it or they didn't. I think that everybody had shit, The Format stuff. I remember the first single, like I had like seven versions of it. It was on, all on different CDs,
yeah.
Burn CDs. I had like so many versions of all
of
these.
Well, you're an Arizona kid too. So yes. They were wildly successful locally before they got signed to Elektra, just from multiple like EPs and singles with the first single. It got tons of radio play on Phoenix radio station, KEDJ The Edge. The first single was in heavy rotation.
These fucking idiots on the other podcast were like, it's called the first single. You couldn't be more vanilla or like plain. I was like, you guys are just saying.
You're missing the point.
I know, but you got to listen to this. I like want you guys to listen to this podcast so you can come back and go, oh, Morgan and TJ, you actually do a good podcast. Like, I want you guys to listen to a bad podcast so you can come back and have something to compare this to.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So you were one of those Arizona kids who had like different copies of.
Yeah, but they were all on like burned CDs.
Yeah,
is
it was
the thing.
Just getting like passed
around. I don't know where they came from. Right. Like, I had so many versions of a bunch of Format songs.
I think The Format is one of those bands that you would just share with people. Like, you'd be like, you have to hear this. And if you put on that burn CD in any car, everybody's like, yeah, this is good. You hear that the start of the first single and you're just like, this is incredible.
Dude, I think that you could hear the start of any of those songs and be like, this is incredible. At least to me, I was like, oh, these are songs. I was like, these are fucking songs. And there are two types of people in this world. There are people that like The Format. And if you like The Format, you are smart and cool and funny and sexy. And if you don't like The Format, you are dumb and poor and ugly.
That is so funny.
It's just the truth.
This is one of those things. I know in the last episode, we had a clip about like stealing your girlfriend's like entire personality and like her band and everything. The Format is one of those bands, I think, for me. There's this girl, we were kind of dating, but we were mostly friends. She's super cool. Her name's Kelly.
What's her last name?
Kelly Jerome.
Let's go. I love full naming people.
And I, you know, we like went to prom together. We were like good friends, but also like we definitely made out a yeah. couple times. But I, yeah, she was the biggest Format fan, and this, I can't like listen to the Format without thinking of Kelly. And, she was from Arizona too. So she was one of the people, she was one of those people who put on the first single and was like, listen to this.
Look, I think it, for somebody that's from Arizona and that grew up listening to stuff that wasn't as pop as this, and for it to like get in the lane that we were in, it was really like a kind of a big deal, because we were like, oh my God, a band that we like is gonna fucking make it. Like this, I would have bet all my cards on the Format.
100%.
I would have absolutely just been like, yep, this is 100%.
Yeah. It's weird that they ended up in the lane that they did, because they don't really sound like anything else that was being made. Like you just said, I think a lot of it has to do with who they were touring with and who they were friends with. I think they did something on Jim Adkins label.
This whole label kerfuffle thing.
Yeah.
Like, I think he was like, God damn it, this is great.
Yeah.
And was like, I have to put this out. And I think he put out something from
them. They toured with Jimmy. They toured with Paramore. They toured with Hello Goodbye, the Rocket Summer. Like for whatever reason, they were kind of in our world, but it's really much more pop and it's a lot more indie than anything else that was coming out. And I don't know why. I think it was just because of who they were friends with.
I think that it got labeled as indie because of Nate's voice, because it wasn't a classic pop artist voice. Those are pop songs, brother. Those are pop songs.
He kind of does have that classic pop voice though, but maybe the world wasn't ready for it yet. Like when you think about Fun, We Are Young, you know, that's like one of the biggest pop songs of the last decade or two, whatever. Yeah, but
I remember when that song first came out, people were like, who's this girl artist?
Oh, they thought it was a girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that it was, that took people by surprise. You know, it's, and I think that that's honestly why they would even be slightly considered indie.
Yeah.
Like I think that maybe didn't resonate for some people. They couldn't, like I said, and I am fucking 100% serious that there are two types of people. And I think that is probably the reason why it didn't, because you either get it or you don't get it. And then there are probably people that are fucking in positions of label power or who puts it on radio or who does X, Y, Z. And they're like, I don't get it.
So there are two guys in this band, Nate Ruess and Sam Means. And one interesting thing that I found about this band is that, or about this album in particular, is that they recorded it in May 2003 with R. Walt Vincent, who's a producer, but he's also a multi-instrumentalist. And he basically played the entire band, like R. Walt Vincent, this
1800s poet.
He played everything. He acted as the backing band for Sam and Nate. That's funny, right? Like that's weird.
Yeah. It also, like, Nate can play like everything, I think, but I don't think he didn't like play guitar on stage.
Right.
But he can, I think. I don't think that you can write these songs without having a knowledge of an acoustic guitar. Like, how are you supposed to fucking write that?
I think that's, you know, his thoughts bounce off of Sam's guitar, as they say in the lyrics to On Your Porch. I think they were a duo. But just given the songwriting and how talented Nate is, I wouldn't be surprised if he knows how to play guitar and piano and is a multi-instrumentalist himself. But going into it, it was really just Sam and Nate, and then they had the producer act as the backing band on the whole thing.
That's interesting. Yeah. Like he played everything?
I'm sure that, you know, they probably brought in some session musicians here and there. They probably, Sam played a few things here and there too. And
I wonder why maybe they did that. Maybe they were just like, he was just better and cleaner and quicker.
Probably.
You know, maybe what fucking Matt was talking about earlier, he's like, dude, maybe there was like a deadline and like they couldn't nail it and this guy could nail it. I don't know. I wonder. I'd be really interested to know why, because I feel like they're both such good musicians and songwriters that I don't know why they wouldn't.
It's play it was any probably of those. It's it feels like it's a collaborative, like warm, fun, cozy album. It feel like it has the group vocals. It has hand claps. It makes it feel like it's a collaborative effort. And I don't think that you could really fake that by just having like two guys sitting on the couch while the producer does everything. I feel like they were all working on it together.
What an, and that's another thing. A really interesting sound that you say collaborative effort, because I feel like everything that Nate has done, and we're, I don't know if Sam was had anything to do with fucking fun or any of those other, like it, all of his shit sounds like a collaborative effort, like that big ass song, which by the way, did you know Jeff Basker was the one that was like
Basker? I hardly know her.
Did you know Jeff was the one that was like, hey, you should sing this song?
Really?
Yes. He was not, they were not, he wasn't going to sing that.
Who was going to sing it? He was going to give it to somebody else.
I think some chick was going to sing it. And like, Jeff was like, you got to sing this song. And Basker was the one that was like, the one.
He's the one who said, Nate, you got to do this.
Yeah. Which we, that this make, it's a little bit of TJ and Morgan lore is like, we worked with Jeff Basker a bunch when we first started.
You did. I really didn't.
Ride or Cry.
What's up, guys? It's Ron again.
Let's go.
Wanted to put you guys on to another band. They're called Asteria. I'm not sure if they're active anymore, but they have an album called Slip Into Something More Comfortable from 2007. Like that name. It's just a phenomenal album front to back, and definitely think you guys should check it out if you've never heard it. I've somehow been able to find so many just underrated bands just going through the similar artist section on Spotify.
I like that he likes music discovery.
Yeah, that's cool.
I feel like that's like a lost source of pride these days, where I don't know, where I'm seeing like the Warped Tour announcement and people are just like, oh, I don't know this band, so it's bad. And I remember like back in the day, it would be like a cool thing to be like, I don't know that band, or like, I know a band that nobody else knows and they're fucking cool.
Well, that's why I like SoundCloud so much.
Yeah.
I love SoundCloud. The emo stuff on SoundCloud is so good because it's, a lot of it is like people not, they, you know, you can upload anything. So I'm finding songs that are like six or seven plays, you know, that are recorded so shitty.
Let's sign them to the label.
They're fucking awesome. And it's just their algorithm of suggesting stuff is really good. Ron, if you want to discover some more music and you've been like an Apple or Spotify guy, just try SoundCloud. Give it like a couple of things you like, and it will really point you in like a really great direction. Also, shout out to being our first repeat caller. Yeah. Like, that's a big deal in old school radio world.
This is the song that they listen to every day on the way to the studio to get the vibe right. You ready?
Yeah, I don't know what you're going to play.
Skipping to the chorus.
No. This part's good. This is good. And I want you here with me from tonight until the end of time. You should know everywhere I go. Is this Kansas?
Chicago. Close. Another Midwest city. Yeah. Wow. A lot of interesting modulation.
Yeah,
there.
No, there's a lot. It's awesome. We should just listen to that's what we should do for a podcast is just listen to that Chicago album.
Yeah, we should definitely do that. But that's, cool. That's fun that that was like their everyday
it's
car ride.
I like get it. It makes the most sense. If you listen to that album, which the album's called Interventions and Lullabies, but if you listen to that album, listening to this song and knowing that, I'm like, oh, hell yeah.
Have you ever listened to XTC?
Yes.
Apparently that, I've never listened and I don't know what it is, but apparently that
it's
was
kind
like
of sounds, it's like huge, that, but more synthy, I think.
Huge inspo for this,
I think
guess.
It's a little bit more synthy.
Let me get to like a popular one. Yeah, this is probably the most, oh, Dear God. It's 35 million streams.
Oh, I'm wrong. Maybe it's like British, is it like British rock? Am I thinking of the band X, which is a LA punk band?
Maybe.
I'm getting a lot of stuff mixed up right now.
Apparently that whole album was like a big inspiration for them, and I've never listened to it. But I also
apparently never, I haven't either.
I also hear a lot of like Harry Nilsson. I hear a lot of the Beach Boys and like that 70s kind of Burt Bacharach pop.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know. I think I hear the format, and I think that that's like the strongest thing you can say about a band is like, this sounds like the form, like this sounds like the band that the band is probably the strongest, like biggest compliment you can say for about a band. I am like, yeah, sure. When you played that Chicago song, I was like, I get it. But that's like, I think the format sounds like the fucking format. I also think I did hear, you know, living in Arizona, like I knew a little bit about, I didn't really know too much about this label thing, but I did hear he's like kind of a curmudgeon-y guy, but I think it's because of all of this shit.
Who, Nate?
Yeah. Because
he's
like
a curmudgeon.
I don't know. I remember hearing that, but it was probably like, dude, you imagine you're in a band.
He won't come on the show. We did reach out. He's not doing press right now, unfortunately.
It's fine. I think he's awesome. I don't care that you're not coming on the show. If you watch this, I think you're fucking awesome. But I did hear that, you know, I remember being like, people are like, oh, he's in bad, like, kind of Matt Pryor situation.
Mm.
But I could be wrong, but it might be, I've been around this time because like, if you think about it in perspective, it's like, you're a genius. You are a genius. I think this guy's a genius. You have all this shit in you that you're like, I have to put this out. This has to be out in the world. And then a label butt fucks you. And yeah. I would be curmudgeon-y too.
Yeah. I mean, imagine, you know, how like frustrated we feel about like our label stuff and like the artists that we work with and like we believe in and think are good. And then it doesn't work. And it's like, why the fuck isn't this working? We know it's good. Like, this is like undisputably a fucking good album. And I know that Nate and Sam knew that. And so I can imagine it gets tiring and frustrating. They didn't get any radio support from the label. They didn't get any marketing support from the label. And they had to rely on touring it themselves relentlessly for years just to get the name out there.
It's fucking crazy. I don't know like who or what was happening or whoever's in charge that they were like, yeah, this is not it, because they're wrong.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that whoever did that. I'm sorry, Nate and Sam, they were wrong. You guys were right.
I remember seeing them on like from the end of their last tour and they just like looked kind of tired, you know?
Yeah, this is like, I can't imagine.
It can be tiring. And like this and Dog Problems are both phenomenal.
I love Dog Problems.
Me too.
I know you love Dog Problems. I love Dog Problems. That album is so fucking good. And it also, again, so different. So different, but I could see that people who are fans of like, if they were like, I like emo music and punk music and all that shit, I could see you listening to Dog Problems and being like, this is too far away from the thing that I like. But I think if you were a fan of the format and you liked Interventions of Lullabies and you didn't like Dog Problems, maybe you just don't like music and maybe you're ugly and stupid. I think that that might be the thing.
It's possible. It's very, very possible.
He also lived without a cell phone for a long time.
In 2003, you could kind of do that.
No, I think he was like very like anti, like, and so people had a hard time getting a hold of him. And I think he's just like, he might be a weird guy.
He might be.
I would love to bother him and talk to him about this stuff.
What are some of your favorite songs off this album?
Here's the thing. I think the entire album is awesome.
Yes.
But I do think that the first six songs.
Yes.
Are all insane. I think Tune Out is amazing.
I don't think there is a better album opener in the entire world than the first single.
Dude, you know what those fucking idiots on that show said?
What?
The snare is too loud.
They don't know anything.
They don't know anything. Their brains are made of shit.
So I noticed you said the first six, which means you don't like On Your Porch.
I do like On Your Porch, but I do think that...
You're not including it in the run?
No, because that's when it starts to get a little slowy. And I like that. I like that. But the run, those first six, people love on Your Porch.
It's a perfect like mid-album slow song. And it's super emotional.
It's also like the second most played on there. And I mean, it says speaks to me and where like I'm at. But like, I think that this, like, he was like one of the guys where I was like, oh yeah, harmonies kick ass.
Yeah, I really like how on the first single and like throughout the whole album, like he's kind of doubling himself.
Yeah, it's
like,
awesome.
The melody is the lower.
That I love that. That's what I do. I like that.
Like when you sing along to this song,
you're singing the high part.
I'm singing the low part.
I'm singing the high part.
But I feel like the average human is singing the low part.
I can't sing the high part, but that's like what I sing.
Like that's like the one that you just like naturally sing.
I sing the high part.
I think those are really, really great harmonies. And I love the way that he's doubling himself all over this album.
Also, like I didn't realize, but I looked at their, you know, like look at the Spotify picture and it cuts off and it literally looks like me.
He does. Yeah, that's your old hair.
That's
your fuck ass Bob.
It literally looks like I thought my phone glitched because when you just open it up on Spotify, you get it like cuts off half of it. It's like, whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
My first single.
I do. Yeah. So Tune Out. Great pop song. I love that you love it that much because that, you know, it just feels like you want to turn on the fucking radio and drive.
Also Give It Up. Great.
Give It Up. Let's talk about Give It Up. Give It Up is kind of like about escaping your hometown. They have a whole lyric about like throwing your hats into the air and like looking for change, which brings me back to like Kelly Jerome. Like we were seniors in high school and I remember being like, I want to fucking get out of this town. And that's kind of like what Give It Up is about. Give It Up also has tuba and brass. It has a fucking marching band feel to it, which you weren't hearing on any other albums in the scene at the time. Other than like Panic at the Disco, but that came out way after this.
Yeah. And that was also like, that was a vastly different vision.
Yes. But like to incorporate tuba and brass into like a playful pop song is really cool.
Dude, I honestly think that maybe I just steal from the format now. I think, which is what I was saying earlier. I think everybody does. I think every single like pop.
Why? You got some tuba and brass?
I use like, horns to accent stuff all the time. I probably wouldn't have done that if I didn't grew up listening to the format.
The format makes you horny.
That should.
It's a good shirt.
It is a good shirt.
On Your Porch, my favorite because it's the slow song. And it's also just like an incredibly open and honest song that Nate wrote about his dad's battle with cancer.
You love a good sad cancer song.
This song, actually, I do want to share a personal anecdote about this song because this came out like right when my grandpa got cancer and he was like on his like last few days, like few years of his life. And I was, you know, this was when I was like playing guitar and like writing songs and like learning what kind of music I like to write and create. And I remember learning this song and then performing it for him and like a few other people in my family at age like 15, like in a backyard making everybody cry.
You ripped off the format too.
I didn't rip them off. I was playing one of their songs.
You ripped them off.
No, you can cover someone's song in appreciation of the song because you relate to it or whatever in your own life. I wasn't ripping them off.
Okay, well, we're all ripping off the format. He turned down it's a nice story. He was offered to join Panic.
What?
Yeah.
What? I didn't come across this.
In the late 2000s, when Panic was restructuring after Ryan left.
No way. Nate was?
Yeah,
that's too much vocal power in one band.
I know. There were rumors that he was approached and he declined
because
he wanted to focus on
fun. That is crazy.
I tried to go super deep in the format. So like I might be on like a lie streak, but it doesn't matter. I also found out that he's like a big wrestling fan.
Is he?
Yep. It's not something that he talks about all the time, but it's like one of the things. And then they had a reunion in 2020. it wasn't meant to be a big deal, but they were supposed to do just like one small show for friends in Arizona. And then when the news leaked, like the demand was so overwhelming that they added like a full.
Okay. Cause I heard a little different story about this reunion show.
All right.
I heard that they basically announced, hey, we're releasing a live concert DVD of us performing. I think it was Dog Problems in full. And we're going to have a premiere at this theater and you guys come watch it. And then everybody showed up thinking they were going to see this movie. And it was really the format playing live. They played Dog Problems front to back. Surprise show.
And they even, did you see that?
I heard it on a pod. And I also heard that they made merch that was like, I went to the format reunion and all, or no, I went to see the format DVD release and all I got was this lousy format reunion show or something like that.
See if we can look that up. Look it up on like,
Jamie, can you look that up, please?
Look it up on Etsy.
Etsy?
Or like something, or like an eBay or something. See if that exists.
In with the outro.
Because that's a good way to figure out if we're lying. We could just do.
Well, I heard it on another pod. So, yeah, it was their reunion. Surprise reunion show. February 4th, 2020. Here we go. Nate Ruess. As it turns out, last night's viewing party was also a surprise acoustic show. Nate and fellow Format founder Sam Means joined forces to play a full set of Format songs for the intimate crowd of 150 people, marking it the first time the band performed in 12 years.
You know me. It's awesome. Every fucking melody on that album is great. It's good. I'm so mad at the other podcast. To give them credit, I was like, what do these fucking dumbasses like talk about then? And I did scroll down and it was like a review of Stained albums. And so I don't know if like that's their lane that they stick in, but it sounded like these guys like knew a lot about the format and they like went to shows and one of these, dude, all right, whatever. I'm gonna call these fun guys out.
I'm looking on Reddit to try to find this piece of merch. And there's actually a little clip of an interview with Sam Means from last year, about 10 months ago.
Yeah, I'd love to hear from Sam.
He said that the Format still plan on doing their reunion shows. He mentioned that Dog Problems turns 20 in 2 years and they have to do them before the anniversary. So with it being December, I think there's a safe chance of it happening this year, 2025. We'll see.
I mean, you say you want to play again. Any plans of that happening with the format?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to happen. We're going to reschedule these shows. But it's like when we scheduled that shows, I mean, we'd been talking about doing that for years leading up to that. Like, and just everything aligned perfectly that we were going to do them in 2020 and then didn't. Yeah, we're just waiting to where, like, I don't have anything too crazy going on. Nate doesn't have anything too crazy going on. It's a big deal. So we're going to do it. It just took a lot of time to orchestrate that the first time around. We had to eventually just cut the cord on that one and we'll have to just start over, but we'll get there. I mean, Dog Problems turns 20 in 2 years.
In 2 years. Yeah. I think, yeah.
So we got to do it before that.
I mean, you say you want to play again and you plan.
I feel, yeah, dude, here's another example of the format being a victim of timing. COVID. They're fucking reuniting in February, 2020. They have these reunion shows planned. They're about to go out and do it. And then a global pandemic hits. Yeah. They cancel everything and they haven't been able to reschedule yet.
Thanks, Joe Biden.
Everything about this band, it seems like they're a victim of timing. It's just poorly timed. It was poorly timed with the release of the album coming out on Elektra. And then they got hit again with COVID. And these poor guys can't fucking catch a break. I mean, I'm very happy that Nate finally did get his flowers with Fun. He won those Grammys. He's doing well. He's chilling. Everybody knows the band Fun and everybody knows Nate's an amazing musician. He eventually just didn't give up. It was kind of undeniable, but the format as a band and these songs and these albums never got the love that they deserved.
I think that he's like one of the best singers in the world.
He absolutely
is. I think that he's like one of the best singers of a band in the entire world. I think the note, like, I also, like, I'm not like a huge lyrics guy, you know, I'm more of a melody guy, but I think that the format also was just so ahead of their time. I think with a lot of bands in emo, and we talked about this a little bit in the Taking Back Sunday episode, where I was like, yeah, they're like saying things differently, like real in it. But I, to me, it sounded like corny. This sounded like he was like talking to you as opposed to talking at you.
Yeah, it's very conversational.
Which the way that I feel about Taking Back Sunday, it sounds like they're singing.
They're just like reading their diary at you.
Yes.
Whereas like this, you're having a conversation.
Which, like, you know, both things, I guess you can consider real, but I think that he was probably just, again, a little bit ahead of his time with the nature of those lyrics and how they are presented in this, in a pop format. Mm.
You know what I found on some of the liner notes here is there was 4 mixers. The album was mixed by a bunch of different people.
That's probably why I have fucking 800 like versions of.
Well, those were the DIY demos that they did with Bob Hogue before they made this album. So they made the EP, and then they made the first single, and they did multiple versions of the first single for those 2 EPs. And that, so there's probably 3 versions of the first single that exist in the world. But on this album, when you go down the track list, there's songs mixed by 4 different people. Mike Shipley, he mixed people like Def Leppard, The Cars, and Shania Twain. Ben Gross, who mixed Marilyn Manson, Breaking Benjamin, and Disturbed. Tom Rothrock, he mixed the Foo Fighters and Elliott Smith. Christopher Fudrich, he mixed Not a Surf and Jimmy Eat World.
Ooh.
But somehow,
Not a Surf, also incredibly underrated band. Not a Surf, at that album with
they played that when we were young,
dude. They're fucking
nobody
awesome.
Nobody went to their
set. They're fucking awesome. Not of that
you should have gone.
Like that's like their biggest hit. It's like maybe their like least.
Yeah.
Cool song. Not a Surf kicks ass.
I think it's interesting though that there's so many people mixed it and it sounds cohesive.
Oh yeah, it does sound like a.
It sounds like a full album. Like you would never know that there were 4 different mixers.
If they like. So I think that each other.
I feel like a mixer can only really be as good as like the raw material that they get from the producer. Like you can only turn the volume up and down so much on like the drum or like the guitar. So whatever that guy R. Walt Vincent was doing when he was producing and recording this album, he put like a very strong touch and sound on everything that stood out through all these different mixers. And I think, you know, they also had like the same mastering engineer, which you think is fake, but you know,
mastering is fake. Now yeah. It is just, fake.
Yeah.
You either just put a limiter on something and then fucking crank up the fucking volume. Mixing is real. Mastering is fake. Also, what's that guy's name? R. Wall Oswald or whatever?
R. Walt Vincent. I looked up what else he did and it was nothing in our scene.
It literally sounds like would have been.
He did like
trapped at sea in like an inside of like a giant whale's mouth.
Oh, R. Walt Vincent, yeah. The writer of Moby Dick.
Yeah. It literally sounds like he would have been. That's what he would have been doing.
He actually, so he worked with Pete Yorn, Liz Phair, and Tommy Keane, a whole bunch of indie rock people.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
For like, this is a really heavy acoustic guitar album.
Okay, Morgan, do you have any, if you like this, you might like that, or any other fun facts you want to say?
I didn't do it. If you like this, you might like that. I forgot to do it because I was so spazzed out about talking to
Matt Squire. Matt Pryor.
But I can probably, you know what? Nah, it doesn't mean you guys know who that is. But
Jimmy Eat World.
Okay, you're just like something corporate stuff.
Guster. Hello, Goodbye.
Gust? I don't know, man.
Modern bands. Bleachers, Wallows, Coin, and later Paramore albums.
Sure.
And Fun.
Sure. Well, I feel like all those are things that people like know of. I'm like, I want to try and be like, all right, maybe you haven't heard of this.
The Somerset.
Okay. Hold on. I will find something. Cause I know that when
the yellow card.
Okay. You're just saying bands now. now we're just saying stuff. Hold on. I will find something because I remember when I started, I have a playlist called Adam Sandals. When I started, Oso is probably pretty good. If you like this style of music, I think that Oso might be right up your alley. Let's see. I'm just like, I feel like I'm going through all of the stuff that
Steel Train, Kevin Devine. Limbeck.
I know you like Kevin Devine. I never got into him.
I like Kevin Devine a lot.
I never got into him. I know he's probably great.
Play Radio Play. That's a good one.
Hold on. Let me just find where I first started K-Rock. Because I know that I've got...
Gay Rock.
I know I first started. Let's see here.
Say Anything. Copeland.
Worst Party Ever. That's if you like that, you might like that. Dikembe.
Dikembe Mutombo?
You might like that if you like this. I'm trying to give you guys things that maybe you're like, I don't know. I maybe haven't heard of. But if you guys are like real emo heads, you would have absolutely heard of them. Ooh, you want to know what's great and actually like a good one?
What? And
one of my, probably wrote one of my like favorite songs in the last like couple of years is this band Alien Boy. Their melodies are very similar to the format in a lot of ways. And I think that that really works. If We Don't Speak is a great song. It's actually a fantastic song. This is a great suggestion by me, honestly. Chorus kicks ass. Wait till it goes to the chorus. You guys are listening in with us. Wait to the chorus.
I like this.
It's awesome.
Cute.
Yeah, they kick ass.
I get what you're saying about the melody part of it. Sonically, I don't know if it's there, but I understand what you're saying, like melody-wise, for sure. Yeah,
I feel like that's what I'm saying. If you like this, you might like this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I think that's all we got to say on the format, interventions, and lullabies.
And if that fucking podcast hears this somehow, if you believe that you are right and you want to have a discussion about this, I will happily talk to you and not be mean.
Thank you guys for listening to CD Burners. And make sure that you are subscribed to our podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and YouTube. Please leave us a review. It really helps the show. Just click the thing, give us 5 stars and share this podcast with people and let them know that we actually are a good podcast out there in the world.
Well, now you can go listen to a bad one and compare it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you guys. We'll talk to you later.
Goodbye.